Greetings, friends. This talk introduces the fifth week's Truth of Happiness course Dharma study on the virtuous factors of the Eightfold Path, right speech, right action, and right livelihood. Included at the end of the talk is a 20-minute Shamatha Vipassana meditation, and the talk concludes with meta-intentional meditation. This talk was recorded in Frenchtown, New Jersey on December 29th, 2015.
So tonight I will introduce right speech, right action, and right livelihood. And I'm just going to read a little bit and talk a little bit, and then I'll let you develop that on your own. From the Anguttara Nikaya, the Buddha's words. When the mind is inclined towards the Dhamma, the disciple of the noble ones, meaning us, the disciple of the noble ones gains a sense of the goal, gains a sense of the Dhamma, gains joy connected with the Dhamma. We've all talked about that. You're starting to gain a sense of it, and it feels good, doesn't it? It's joyful. In one who is joyful, rapture arises. In one who is rapturous, the body grows calm. Kevin, you talked about that, how you see how this fits into your life and it calms you down because you're living your life with some understanding now. One whose body is calmed experiences ease. We enjoy our lives. Our lives are just easier. These are the Buddha's words over 2,500 years ago, and he's describing the application of the Dhamma. He's not talking in magical or mystical terms. One whose body is calm experiences ease. That's incredible. In one at ease, the mind becomes concentrated. Going back to the last factor of the Eightfold Path. What's the point? A well-concentrated mind. But the word that's often used to describe, the word often used by the Buddha to describe that is samadhi, S-A-M-A-D-H-I. And the best translation of samadhi is not concentrated, but it's non-distracted. We've developed a non-distracted state of mind. We're no longer distracted by our own craving and clinging, and dukkha has no place to arise. It has no place to make a home within us because we're no longer distracted. We're well concentrated within this framework. Right view, these are my words, right view initially is being mindful of the Four Noble Truths, beginning with the truth of stress. Clinging, craving, desire, and aversion all cause unhappiness and stress. Right view then brings to mind the possibility of the cessation of stress. Understanding the cause of the distraction of stress and the possibility to end stress, right view develops mindfulness of the path leading to the cessation of dukkha, the cessation of stress. We understand what the problem is and we understand how to correct the problem. And our minds, as long as we can maintain that concentration, stay inclined towards resolution rather than continuing the confusion of dukkha, of the distraction of dukkha. Being mindful of right view, right intention develops the presence of mind and the strong resolve to abandon craving and clinging. It is craving for or clinging to any object or view that perpetuates unhappiness and stress. It is clinging to all objects, views, and ideas that have arisen from ignorance that must be recognized and abandoned. And again, going back to concentration in the wider framework of the Eightfold Path, that's where concentration comes in. If we maintain our distracted state, we'll never be able to recognize or abandon craving and clinging. We'll never be able to end the cause of our own unsatisfactory experience in life. Mindfulness as presented in the Eightfold Path is developing mindfulness of all views of an impermanent ego personality. It is craving for objects, views, and ideas that support the establishment of an ego personality that initiates clinging. As understanding develops, it becomes clear that preoccupation with views attached to an ego self maintains stress. Once this process is recognized and craving and clinging diminish, preoccupation and distraction lessens. As distraction lessens, samadhi, non-distraction, increases. The practical benefits of the Eightfold Path begin to become apparent. It is the preoccupation with stress that creates a distraction that continues wrong views. And that's really the problem. The Buddha could have almost as effectively said the first noble truth is this truth of the distraction of stress, because it really is the distraction due to that preoccupation with always chasing after what makes us feel good and being constantly mindful of anything that might interfere with our happiness that creates that distraction that causes most people to live their lives in the past and in the future and caught up in their own head replaying this idea of their ego personality and how it must be protected. If we can let go of those views, that distraction isn't there. And so what's the result of that? It's the refined mindfulness that the Buddha demonstrates. We're able to be fully present in our lives as our life occurs. We're no longer driven by our desires and our aversions. We're here with what's taking place. We're living our lives fully. I think I'm going to end. Yeah, let me talk a little bit just about the moral and ethical factors of the Eightfold Path and why they're there, and how sometimes it's these three factors more than anything else that Buddhism is seen as a religion because there's some moral and ethical aspects of it, like there are in every religion. But there's a significant difference, and I'm not negating any type of religion. It's just a different point of view. In most religions, and I was brought up Roman Catholic, you're taught to have moral and ethical behavior because that's what a good Roman Catholic will act this way. And so do you see how if I do that, I'm creating an identity as a good Roman Catholic, rather than it coming from an expression of an awakened human being? And I didn't understand this when I was 13 or 14 and I told Mommy and Daddy I can't go to church anymore, but it left me very agitated that I had to continue to be a person that fit into this view rather than who I felt I was. Am I making sense? Mm-hmm. So the significant difference then in what the Buddha is teaching is that primarily if we are engaged in wrong speech, wrong action, or wrong livelihood, our minds will be way too agitated when we sit and we won't be able to develop concentration. What he recognized was that if we can awaken fully as a human being, I will naturally be engaged in right speech, right action, and right livelihood. And it won't be because of an image of myself being a good Catholic or a good Buddhist or a good Muslim or a good Jew or any other reason. Or just I'm just a really good human being without religion, which we've all heard. It's a natural expression of who I am as a fully mature human being. I don't have to concern myself with being a good anything. It's who I am. And it's the essence of every human being. Within every human being, and the Buddha, I won't get into that talk, but the Buddha recognized, and he lived in a very violent time too. It wasn't just a peaceful garden in northern India. There was a lot of violence then. He recognized that at the heart of all violence and all competitiveness between people and between nations was a lack of understanding of this ego personality. And that if we can develop an understanding of that within ourselves, we will naturally be moral and ethical people. It's an expression of who we are. The secret, though, is to recognize that I'm not engaged in right speech, right action, and right livelihood because I want to be the best Buddhist there is. Or I want my Buddhist teacher to acknowledge that I'm the best Buddhist that there is. It's to understand that an awakened human being always engages in right speech, right action, and right livelihood. And the reason for that is that there's no ego personality to protect. So many, many students over the years tell me when they first engage in this, that looking at right speech and trying to hold in mind, to be mindful of right speech and right action and right livelihood, really begins to show where they're clinging. And if you want to understand the present state of your mindfulness or your consciousness or your being, look at what comes out of your mouth. Because that will give you a clear picture of what's going on in your life and in your mind. But most importantly, and I think the most important aspect of right speech is to recognize and acknowledge what you're saying to yourself, that constant conversation that we have in our own minds. Because that's the conversation that keeps reinforcing an ego personality. And often, when people take to the Dhamma, they start recognize how hard they are themselves, that negative self-talk that we all have. That's all negative self-referential expressions in this conversation we have in our minds. That's not the only expression of right speech. Right speech is very specific, and right action is very specific, and right livelihood as well. Basically, right speech, right action, and right livelihood is thoughts, words, and deeds that remain harmless to others and to ourselves, always. Another important part of or aspect of right speech and the other two factors is speech that is useful and necessary. Someone was talking about being more quiet at home now that you're developing this. Well, that's an aspect of that, is understanding, is what coming out of my mouth useful and is it necessary? Because most of the energy that we spend in our lives is engaged in idle chatter or idle distractions on Facebook and the other things. And I'm not saying there's not some usefulness to it, but most of our chatter is idle chatter. And sometimes it rises to the level where nobody's listening. It's just everybody's engaged in that idle chatter. And it's so important to us that we'll start screaming over other people to get our idle chatter out. And again, just to make that point, do you see what a big distraction that is to our own lives? So it's not that other people are engaged in idle chatter. I am. And the more that I can develop an understanding of what's most useful for me to talk about, the quieter I become, the less agitated my mind is, the less I engage in gossip, or the less I engage in trying to promote an ego personality in some way or another, including constant twittering and Facebooking, the more relaxed I am, the more calm my mind is, the less I'm clinging to the outside world looking for fulfillment, and the more I can develop that within myself. By simply using this framework, and again, Darwin, thank you so much for talking about how this can be very complicated. These teachings are very, very simple. When the Buddha talked about mindfulness in the other way that he did, he talked about mindfulness only in two ways. One was the four foundations of mindfulness. The other application was to be mindful of each factor of the Eightfold Path. So when he was talking about mindfulness of right speech, he said to be mindful when engaged in wrong speech and enter and remain in right speech. And he said the exact same thing about each factor of the Eightfold Path. What's the use of that refined mindfulness? To understand when we're engaged in wrong speech or wrong action or wrong livelihood. And then to stretch it out a little further, to be mindful when we're in wrong view, wrong intention, wrong effort, wrong mindfulness. There's a reason why those words are used. There's a common misunderstanding that the Buddha taught something called non-duality. That's a Hindu teaching. Again, not putting down Hindu teaching. The Buddha taught specific duality. Recognize when you're in a wrong expression of the Eightfold Path, be mindful of it, and come back into the right expression of the path. That's a clear expression of duality, and it's an important thing to recognize. Why is it important? Because then we learn that we can engage in a dualistic way of living our lives. We can keep inclining our minds towards more confusion and more distraction, or we can develop a framework of the Eightfold Path within our lives and incline our minds towards awakening, towards fully maturing as a human being. And that's the choice every one of us has. And that duality must be acknowledged and it must be seen, or else we won't be able to make that distinction. Again, the reason why the Buddha was an awakened human being is he knew how to think, but also what to think about, what to hold in mind. Remember, mindfulness means to hold in mind or to recollect, at least as far as the Dhamma is concerned. We need to learn what to hold in mind, what to recollect. When we're out on the street, that's so useful because it inclines our mind back towards the Dhamma when we're caught up in it. That's the type of mindfulness that the Buddha is talking about. It's easy to be somewhat mindful while we're sitting on our cushions, but can we take it out into the marketplace? Can we take it out into our mundane lives? Yes, we can, by being mindful of the Eightfold Path. And then another aspect of this, just to reiterate that point, right speech towards ourselves tells us to be always very gentle with ourselves. When we get caught up in the outside world and we react in a less than skillful way, immediately forgive yourself and recognize what you need to change. So mindfulness is recognition and renunciation. It's recognizing craving and clinging and abandoning it. And before we can do that, we have to develop an awareness of it, right? That I keep mentioning Anthony DeMello's book, Awareness, and the one great thing that's in that book, I still remember it, and I read that book probably 30 years ago. He said that awareness isn't change, but it's the power to change. We first have to know what we're dealing with. We first have to develop an understanding of what the Buddha said is anatta, not a self. In that interplay with the three marks of existence, and we'll get into that in week 7, so that we can undo that process. Another way of saying that, in week 8 we'll learn about dependent origination, we can start undoing that process that from ignorance of the Four Noble Truths leads to constant distraction and suffering. We can actually unravel those connections directly through our mindfulness and within the framework of the Eightfold Path. So that's the introduction to next week's study.
Congratulations on completing this week's Dhamma study. Remember to be gentle with yourself and enjoy your study. The most loving action we can take for ourselves and for all beings is to develop the Dhamma and awaken. If you feel that you would like to review any week's study or take longer than 1 week to integrate a lesson before beginning the next week's lesson, please do so. There is a lot to integrate. Continue to integrate your meditation practice into the broader framework of the Eightfold Path and the other supportive direct teachings of the Buddha. Keep in mind that this course develops the foundation for a lifetime of lasting peace and happiness. The continued development of these principles is based on your own continued right effort. Peace.